This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
What's up, preacher man?
An Alabama high school comes under fire for having prayer in schools. We have the story now on The Patriot Preacher. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to The Patriot Preacher, covering the news from a Christian perspective. Welcome to the program, everybody. Great to be with you on this Thursday morning. Hope that you are all well. Did want to talk to you about this story, which caught my eye. This is courtesy of our news partners at the Alabama News Network, so a hat tip to them. Thanks for bringing this information to us. Apparently, Opp High School, so Opp, Alabama, about, 90 minutes south of here, they have come under fire and have received a letter from the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And for those of you unfamiliar with it, it's a prominent atheist foundation. They're a group that operates and typically goes after things like schools who they feel are violating what their interpretation of the First Amendment is, where people bring religion into the public square. They're actually headed by a guy named Dan Barker. He's somebody that most of you probably aren't familiar with. I've been keeping an eye on him for some time because, frankly, I was introduced to him. He was in a debate a long time ago that I watched with Kyle Butt with Apologetics Press. So, been following his career for some time. He and his wife have been running this organization for many years. And so to get into the letter and what's actually going on here, the Freedom From Religion Foundation sent a letter to Opp High School of complaint. This revolved around the baccalaureate service that they had for their seniors, and that there was a prayer that took place at their graduation ceremony. So the baccalaureate service is not in and of itself illegal, but their assertion is that they're not allowed to have such services on school grounds because that shows an endorsement of the event. So looking through the letter, and I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's about 2.5 pages long, so we won't get into the rigmarole of that, but I will tell you exactly, and thanks to Alabama News Network for providing the entire letter for me to read through a couple times. The letter itself affirms that a baccalaureate is intended as a religious service, and that's their contention with the school hosting one, which is ironic because if you're already there asserting that a baccalaureate is a religious service, what you are essentially doing is saying, well, we know that it's there and its sole purpose is to be religious, and you're violating the rights of the people at the school by having it. But here's the thing, and now, granted, you guys know what an extremist I am on this, so take that into consideration with a grain of salt, and what I'm saying is probably crazy, but just hear me out on this. You could try not attending if you're offended by it. That is a possible solution. It's not during school hours. It is not as though every senior is required to show up. So if you are an atheist, a Muslim, a Jewish person, or if you just don't like Christians, or if you are a Christian but just don't want to go to the service, the solution could be, and again, I know that I'm probably throwing out a bunch of crazy theories here, you could try just not going to the thing, and then you wouldn't be offended by it. That is a possible option for you. So, as far as that goes, and I'm going to make a point here, because now I know that there's going to be some people that don't like this, but, you know, throw whether or not you like it or not just out the window for just a second and hear me out on this. Personally, and I don't begrudge anybody that does, but personally, I don't celebrate Christmas as a religious holiday. I do celebrate Christmas, I spend time with my family, but I do not celebrate it as the birth of Christ, because that command is not in the scripture. There are people that the vast majority of the people I know do. There's even people within my own congregation that do. I just don't. Don't begrudge people that do. I just don't. When my school would host Christmas concerts, and they would play songs that would talk about Christ being born on Christmas, I just didn't go. Didn't make a big deal about it. Didn't try to stop it. Didn't belittle anybody that was going to it to attend it or to participate in it by playing. I just didn't want to go because I knew it wasn't something that interested me. And I know that that's a crazy idea, but if I didn't have any interest in it, I didn't really have any desire to go. And so I think that that would have been the easiest solution for anyone that would have been offended by this baccalaureate service. All right. And the other issue that they bring up in this letter is that there was a prayer that was led at graduation. It was led by a student, but they're saying that it is wrong to even have a prayer at any kind of school function, which would include a graduation. Now, again, if the prayer offends you that much, you cannot go to graduation. I know that that's a little different than a baccalaureate service because, you know, it is your graduation, and I understand that. But here's the thing. As far as prayer goes, and I'm going to make a similar analogy to the one I just led, and I know that this one's probably going to get even more people upset with me, but as my understanding of the scriptures, and I won't get into the technicalities of it. I can if you want me to later. But I personally don't believe that women should be leading men in prayer. Not saying that women can't pray alongside men, not saying that they can't participate, not saying they can't pray themselves and that their prayer is somehow not as good as a man's prayer, it's just the same. All I'm saying is, as the spiritual leaders, I think that men should be the ones leading prayers. Because of that, sometimes I was with a group where women would lead a prayer. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, at my own graduation, a woman led a prayer. But when I'm faced with that, or if sometimes Catholics pray, nothing against my Catholic friends, lived with a Catholic for about 4 years, who's my roommate in college, and we, you know, would talk about things but never got upset at each other and still talk to this day. So when Catholics pray, sometimes some of their prayers start with praying to Mary. And I don't pray to Mary, that's not part of my religious belief, so when that happens, whether it's a lady leading prayer or a Catholic person leading prayer, I don't participate in that prayer. But I also don't try to stop them from praying. I don't jump up and try to interrupt the prayer. I don't try to, you know, yell at them or anything. I just wait patiently, wait for them to finish, and I'm as respectful as I possibly can, and then it ends. See, that's tolerance. The left talks about tolerance, about just not having any kind of religion interjected into public life at all. That's not tolerance at all. Tolerance is when somebody engages in an activity that you aren't necessarily, you know, interested in, you just wait patiently, wait for them to finish, and then go about your business. I wasn't offended, didn't bother me, never tried to stop any of that. Now, when the question would be brought up about why I don't do those things, I would talk to them about that in a calm and respectful manner, but I never tried to stop them from doing such a thing. That's what respecting someone else's belief looks like. And the Freedom From Religion Foundation, I think, could take a page out of that book. If you don't like it, you don't have to pray. Nobody can make you pray. That's pretty clear. So, you know, just that being said, keep that in mind. You can, that's what real tolerance is. It's disagreeing with the person, but not inhibiting that person from engaging in that activity. That's tolerance. Just something to think about. 860-1440, if you want to weigh on this, give me your ideas, your thoughts on what's going on in Op, Alabama. We'll be right back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
I recommend a general and public return of praise and thanksgiving to him from whose goodness these blessings descend, John Jay, First Supreme Court Chief Justice.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in, and we'll go ahead and jump to the phones right now. Let's go to Pat on line one. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, sir. How are we doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. What you been up to?
Oh, just trying to make a day go by. On this issue about prayer in school, I think that's one of the saddest things that we've done is take prayer out of school. I was military raised, attended military school, and you can imagine we had a lot of different type people in our classrooms. And every morning when we come in, the teacher said, you know, we're going to do our prayer, we're going to say the Pledge of Allegiance. Anybody that don't want to participate, please step out in the hallway. And there were kids that did. And after that was over, they come back in, and we finished our day out just as happy as, you know, content we could be. Nobody discriminated against them for not participating. We respect each other's beliefs. But for this day and time, we really need prayer back at school. We've seen what it's doing to our school system. We've seen what it's doing to our people. You know, and, you know, you mentioned about atheists earlier. Well, to me, science is like having atheists in school because they don't teach as the Bible does where we came from. They teach as if we come out of the sea out of a damn fish. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's like teaching atheists in school to me.
Well, in a sense it is, and this is one of the things that I always appreciated because I had a teacher at my school, and I can say this because I'm not going to get her in trouble because she's retired now. My biology and anatomy and physiology teacher, she would always teach the evolution aspect of it, but she would also teach other theories, including creationism. And so I really appreciated the fact that she would bring forward, you know, what the textbook said, and then would also teach the opposite side of it. And then I got a much more robust view of the world through that teaching. And so, yeah, I agree 100%. It is almost like they are promoting atheist doctrine by doing so. And I really do wish that we would bring prayer back into schools in a more concrete manner. So, sorry, go ahead.
It's just a shame to me that we got so little to worry about that something like this is something we would attack in America. You know, we've delivered Bibles all over the world to try to get people back in this frame of mind, and yet right here at home we're taking stuff away from our children so that they have to go elsewhere to learn it. And when you put folks in one setting of one religion, they don't learn the vast religion. They don't get to choose what religion they believe in or how they want to follow. They have to, you know, do what their parents tell them to do. And by putting prayer back in school, you get to see and talk with your friends about where they're coming from, why they chose the route they chose, and it gives you a better variety of religion. Hang on, to me, there's only one religion. There's one God, you know, and all that. Don't get me wrong, but
right, one Lord, one faith, one baptism.
Right, it gives the individual a choice of how they want to proceed and how they want to learn. And to me, as long as they're learning about Christ and the Lord, then they'll get out on the right track.
I think you're right, Pat, and thanks so much for your call. I appreciate that. I appreciate you calling in and sharing that with us. And, I wanted to bring this up, too, because I'm going to connect this a little bit. I was going to wait until tomorrow to really start talking about the shooting again because, like I said, don't want to get into the politics of it until 48 hours after the tragedy takes place. That's going to be my rule of thumb with dealing with tragedies like Manchester, the other shootings and killings that we've had around the world. But I'm going to do something apolitical here and talk about it because this has nothing to do with politics. It's interesting that one of the things that we're learning from the shooter, and the more that we learned about him, obviously he, by the way, a quick update on that, he actually passed away And you may recall yesterday when I was discussing this matter with Senator Luther Strange the other day, one of the things that I said was, I hope that he does live so that he can face justice. Well, believe me, he's facing a pretty severe form of justice right now. So
yeah, you told me that before we went on the air. I said, I hate the fact that he's not going to face justice. And you quickly said, Joe, he's going to really face justice.
Yeah, he's facing the ultimate form of justice now. But anyway, the thing that I wanted to bring up is that one of the things we're learning about the guy is that it seems as though he was a very outspoken atheist, which really shouldn't surprise anybody. Now, granted, hear out what I'm saying. There are atheists that would not hurt a fly, so I'm not attributing this to all atheists. What I'm saying is, though, when you are in that mindset and you do not have God to fall back on, you do not have a higher power, you do not have somebody that you believe you're going to have to answer to, well, I'm sorry, but at that point, you are far more likely, because you don't have that backstop, that anchor to hold yourself to anchor yourself to the truth, it's easier to justify in your mind going out and hurting people like this. So again, not attributing it to all atheists or anything like that, because this was just this one guy and it was his fault. I'm saying, though, if you hold that worldview that is absent of God, is absent of Christ, then it is easier to justify killing someone because you think, quote unquote, they deserve it in your mind. If you believe in God, you believe, like I just said with the whole justice thing, that he's going to take care of that, that vengeance is his, that even if people get away with bad things in your mind in this life, that they're going to answer for it one day. And so getting back to the letter, and I do have the letter right here in front of me, there were several things that I took issue with in regards to this letter. First of all, it starts out, a concerned district community member contacted us, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, nonprofit, so on and so forth. This last sentence of the first paragraph, their purpose is to protect the constitutional principle of separation in church and state. I'm offering this, you know, we give away fun things like the Biscuits tickets and the Decades Rewind event, which, by the way, I'm giving away tickets now. So if you want those, call in. We can put your name in the hat for those. Pat, your name will be entered for that, by the way, if you want to. But I'm going to offer something a little bigger. I will give anybody within the sound of my voice $10 million right now if you can show me the word separation of church and state in the Constitution.
Does that include me?
Yes, Joe, if you find those words in the Constitution, well, I'll give you 10. I don't care that you are my producer. I'll give you $10 million.
Darn, I would take 10 bucks right now, but you know what?
It's not in there.
No, it's not. I think that challenge has been, not the $10 million part, but I think that challenge has been offered before, and yeah, it's not.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I've got about 400 bucks in my bank account, so that's how confident I am that it's not in there. But anyway, schools, and here's another thing, too. Let's just say, for the sake of their argument, that those words were in the letter. Those words were in the Constitution. Let's say separation of church and state was actually in the Constitution somewhere, which, of course, it is not. Even if that were the case, schools are an affiliate of the state government. They are not bound by the federal mandates on that. The 10th Amendment makes that abundantly clear. So even if that were in the Constitution, those are regulations that apply to the federal level. Schools are agents of the state, and thus would not be bound by it anyway. So even if that were the case, it still wouldn't make a difference. But yeah, that is a standing offer from now till the end of time. Anybody finds that in the Constitution, I will give you $10 million. All right, we got a guest coming up. We'll be right back. Take it away, Rush.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Philippians 3:20. For our citizenship is in heaven, from which also we eagerly wait for a Savior, the Lord Jesus Christ.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in, but we do have a guest right now. So we want to introduce him. Scott Triple is with us, as he's been many times before. Welcome to the program, Scott.
Good morning, Montgomery.
So tell us a little bit about the biscuits. What's going on here? What are we promoting today?
Well, we are promoting the second half of the season. So we just finished up the – well, actually, we're in Mississippi right now finishing up the first half. And then we have the All-Star break Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of next week. And we come back on Thursday, June 22nd. It's the start of a brand-new season for us. The Southern League plays two halves. So it's the start of the second half. And it's also our grand reopening weekend. So our new ownership is officially in place. We've had some time to kind of put some stuff together, create some new promotions, and we're really excited to kind of share all this stuff with Montgomery and hopefully get them excited and wanting to come out and experience Riverwalk and Biscuits Baseball once again.
Excellent. Well, now, I do want to get to what we're here to talk about, of course, the grand reopening, but just before we get to that, let's talk just a little bit about the All-Stars. Tell us about our All-Stars that we had going to the game this year.
Yeah, we actually had six guys selected, one of which was Diego Castillo, who got called up to AAA already, so we're only going to have five guys representing us, but we've had a great, great team this year. So we've got two pitchers, Jose Mujica and Mike Franco, both who have been tremendous for the Biscuits this year, and then three hitters, Cade Gatta, Braxton Lee, and Justin O'Connor. All of which, again, Cade Gatta and Braxton Lee are currently number one and number two in the Southern League in batting average. Justin O'Connor is one of the best catchers in the league. Mm-hmm. So it's really exciting to be able to go down to a different team's market, see all the All-Stars and all the players all kind of grouped together. This is the first time that the players who aren't on the All-Star team have a more than one day off in a row, so they're excited for it.
Oh, I'm sure. But
our All-Stars are just as excited to go and put on an exhibition for the fans of Pensacola, just like they did for Montgomery 2 years ago.
Right. Well, and that's one thing that I don't want to get too deep into this, but if you're in any kind of entertainment venue, and I know that I'm preaching to the choir talking to you, but if you're in any kind of entertainment venue, whether it's talk radio or sports or whatever it may be, you kind of have to make peace with the fact that you're going to be working when everyone else is not working. And so it's the same thing with these guys. You know, you think about the weekend as being your free time. Well, because the weekend is your free time, it's their busiest time.
Right.
So
well,
same kind of thing.
Is that a segue to remind people that we have a game on July 4th? But
Well, it wasn't, but let's make it into
yeah,
one.
You hit the nose on the head. People will say, oh, I'd love to work in baseball. Wait, what do you mean I have to work Memorial Day weekend? What do you mean I can't take any summer vacation? What do you mean I have to work on 4th of July? But yeah, I mean, we love it. I've been doing this for 15 years now. But again, 4th of July, knowing that it's people's day off, that just gives us extra motivation to put on a good show, make sure that when the fans do come out, they're having that much better of an experience.
And y'all are going to have a great show with the massive Max fireworks on July 4th, which is one of the reasons I want to be out there.
You mean there'll be fireworks on the 4th of July?
Wow. I know.
They're
trying something new this year.
Yeah, the last fireworks show, on the last homestand, that was really massive. That was
our Harry Potter night was
incredible.
That last Saturday, and it was a great show. And again, our pyro crew does a great job of putting the stuff together, and so when we do our Massive Max fireworks show, our regular Max fireworks are great. They're about 4.5 to 5 minutes long, but when we do our Massive, they're closer to 8 minutes, just a lot more displays and aerial effects, so it's really fun. And we've actually got two Max fireworks coming up next weekend for a part of our grand reopening weekend on Friday the 23rd and on Saturday the 24th.
Well, I do have a quick question about the 4th of July event, because I just recently came across this. You know, Major League Baseball, of course, they always do their Independence Day games as well. And one of the cool things that they do is all the teams in the major leagues will have their regular team hat, but in the background, kind of faded behind their logo, they have the imprint of the American flag. Do the Biscuits do that as well?
We don't officially. There is an Independence Day hat for sale on minorleaguebaseball.com, but it's actually interesting. When we look at doing stuff like that, we're always very cognizant of one particular group, and that's the military. Whenever we talk with our military leadership here at Maxwell, you know, we always say, hey, you know, what do you think about doing a camo this or an American flag that? And they're always very protective and very cautious about putting the stars and stripes on any type of merchandise, especially if it's for sale or something like that. They really want to honor and respect that flag.
Which is the way it should be.
Exactly. And we wholeheartedly agree with them. And so we don't have an American flag jersey or things like that. But what we try to do is, in addition to the fireworks, we're actually trying to get a commissioned World War I traveling museum to come by on July 4th. It's not final yet. We're working on it, but hopefully that'll be a nice little extra kick. And we're also, fingers crossed, working very, very hard with the FAA to get a flyover scheduled, to get one of those C-130s up in the air and fly over just to show everyone how great of a military presence Montgomery does have.
Yeah, that's something that this town has always been very proud of, and they should be. In regard to that, though, and the respect of the flag, I'm really interested in that World War One traveling museum because we talk a lot about World War II, and we should. I mean, it's a great period in American history that we were able to overcome that. But I think sometimes we do it to the nth degree to the point where sometimes we kind of forget World War One, and we just recently lost our last surviving World War One vet. So it would be really nice to be able to do that on Independence Day.
Yeah, and that's what was great about opening day this year is that we had the Thunderbirds and Patrol de France in town, and it was
a great event, by the way.
Sure was.
The 100th anniversary of World War One, 75th anniversary of the Air Force. So it's just kind of a great kind of year to remember and memorialize that stuff.
All right. So real quick before we go, do tell us a little bit about the individual days in the grand reopening.
Yes. So grand reopening weekend starts on Thursday, June 22nd. We are going to shoot a guy out of a cannon. Doesn't get much more patriotic than that.
Amen. God bless America.
How does anybody ever learn to be shot out of a cannon?
It's actually a family business. He learned it from his family. It's kind of during the heydays of the 70s with Evel Knievel and stuff like that, his dad was like, you know what? I'm going to shoot myself out of a cannon. He was a trapeze artist, and it was just really a way to project himself from one area to a net.
Most kids' dads like teach him how to build model planes or something like that.
Not this guy. And again, he has three kids, and they have their own little mini cannon that they drive around. It's adorable. So that's going on along with Thirsty Thursday on Thursday, June 22nd. Friday the 23rd, Deontay Wilder, the heavyweight champion of the world from Tuscaloosa, is going to be in town. He's going to throw out a ceremonial first pitch. Stick around, watch the game. He got kind of taken advantage of with some autographs, so he doesn't like signing autographs, but he does like talking to fans. He does like meeting and greeting, maybe take a picture here or there. But again, it should be a really fun event with Max Fireworks, and it's our Public Safety Appreciation Night. So then on Saturday is kind of a really cool thing we're doing for downtown. Starting at 3 o'clock, we're going to have a block party outside Tallapoosa Street, completely free. Come on down. We're going to have food trucks. We're going to have inflatables. We're going to have a crawfish boil. We're going to have a little sprinkler system set up for the kids, splash pad type stuff. And then we're going to have live music, capstoning with the original rapper from the 80s, Curtis Blow, the guy who did the breaks and basketball. I mean, he was the inspiration to all of the rap that came after him with Grandmaster Flash and Sugar Hill Gang, just a legend in the music industry. He's going to do about 20 minutes on Tallapoosa Street completely for free. So if you want to see Curtis Blow for free, come on down to the block party. Then we're going to bring everyone into the game. He's going to do another 40-minute set after the game inside the stadium.
And aren't you impressed that I really knew who Mr. Blow was?
I am impressed, and here's the thing. I know that the average person wouldn't think this, considering my button-down plaid shirt, jeans, and cowboy boots. But I actually am not – I don't know a whole lot about rap. But it sounds like this guy's got quite a resume and he's been around. So, you know, great that everybody's going to be able to come out and see him. When I heard his name, I thought I was reading it wrong, and it was a reference to the Lynyrd Skynyrd song, Curtis Lowe.
Oh.
So I thought that there was a typo or something. But no, that's great, and it sounds like it's going to be a really great event. I may even swing by myself. What else we got going on that weekend?
Finally, on Sunday, we're going to do Youth Sports Day with Superheroes Night. So our first Superheroes Night got about 8 inches of rain dumped on it. That was the epic flooding night. So we're redoing it on Sunday the 25th. And then any kid 12 or under who shows up to the game wearing any kind of youth sports or youth association uniform gets in completely for free. So if you just show up wearing your T-ball shirt or your Boy Scout uniform, whatever it may be, you get in for free.
So just out of curiosity, when it flooded and kept everybody away, did just the kids dressed as Aquaman show up? Because it seems like that wouldn't have bothered them as much.
Yeah, hindsight, that would have been a great promotion, but we did not have Aquaman in the stadium that night. We had Batman, we had Superman, we had Wonder Woman, so we had most of the Justice League. But
no one cares about Aquaman.
Yeah.
He's just hanging back at the Hall of Justice making a sandwich, waiting for something to happen in the water. So
we'll see if Jason Momoa can give him some props here in a couple years when the movie comes out.
All right, well, thank you so much, Scott, for being with us. And guys, keep in mind, give us the dates one last time.
June 22nd through the 25th. It's a week from today. So get out there. Tickets are going fast. Again, this is a great event. It's our new ownership really coming in, making their stamp on Montgomery, saying, hey, we're here. We're all about fun. We're all about the community. So we hope people come out and support it.
And that's absolutely the truth when it comes to the Montgomery Biscuits. They love Montgomery. They love this community, and we love them, and we got to get out there and support them. I go there swinging down to the baseball stadium as often as I can because being a big baseball junkie like me, quality baseball, I mean, they prove that even though mathematically we've now been eliminated from the first half, we're playing high-quality ball, and now we've got a whole brand-new clean slate to start over and win that second half. So hopefully we'll be able to pull that off and go to the playoffs for the third time in a row.
Absolutely. Brand new season on June 22nd.
All right, guys. Check it out. We'll be back. It's a brand
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
The doctrines of Jesus are simple and tend all to the happiness of man. Thomas Jefferson.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to call in. Let me know what's on your mind. Before we move on, did want to mention the Sounds of Summer continue at the Shops of East Chase this Thursday with national recording artist Los Five, bringing their signature sound from California to the Sounds of Summer stage at 7 o'clock. This event is free to attend and includes kids' activities like face painting, balloon artist, and a bouncy house. Vendors on-site include Blackfin Ameripub, Dothan Ice Cream, That's My Dog, and Alabama Sweet Tea. You can also register to win $50 as an East Chase gift card on-site. Hotel accommodations provided by Staybridge Suites Montgomery. Book your stay at sbhotelmontgomery.com. All right. Getting back to the story we were covering before we sat down with Scott from the Biscuits, we were talking about the letter that was posted by this group from the Freedom From Religion Foundation. They have apparently a member that saw that Opp High School in Opp, Alabama, was having a baccalaureate service and had a graduation which included an opening prayer, and they sent this letter saying that essentially, you need to cease and desist. You can't do that. That's illegal, so on and so forth. So one of the things we talked about is, A, the whole premise of their argument is incorrect because they were talking about the constitutional separation of church and state, which, of course, doesn't exist. Secondly, according to this letter by the Freedom From Religion Foundation, they have said, and let me see if I can find the spot. Oh, here it is. This is about halfway down the letter. To avoid the perception of school sponsorship of religious practices, the district must immediately end all involvement with the baccalaureate. This means that no public school employees can be involved in further hosting, organization, planning, or coordination of the event. So according to them, according to the Freedom From Religion Foundation, you cannot even have an employee of the district school system involved in its hosting, organization, planning, or coordination. That presents several problems. First of all, what about the teachers? And not just teachers. There's also lunch ladies, bus drivers, janitorial staff. All kinds of people are employed by the district school system. What about those who have kids that are graduating? Because, and one of the reasons that I thought of this immediately is because my dad was a ag teacher for 27 years at Marbury High School and was also the person that did my graduating class's baccalaureate service because he's also a minister. So what about those people? He was obviously involved, and again, I can say this because he's retired now and I can't get him into any trouble. But the point in all of this is, what would have happened then? Would he have been banned from attending or even being involved in any way in the baccalaureate service, even though it's his own son's baccalaureate? Same thing goes for my younger sister and brother. So does he just surrender his religious freedom or his freedom to even attend an event that his child is involved in because he happens to be an employee of the school system? That seems to be what the Freedom From Religion Foundation is suggesting. Not only that, since they're talking about hosting, planning, coordination of, what if you're just a parent that works at the school and you want pictures of your kid that's graduating in the slideshow, for example? Well, I'm pretty sure that putting together pictures for that event would be planning the event. You're planning something that goes on during the event. Are they going to bar you from having any organizational abilities in that event whatsoever? See, they have a ridiculous standard that nobody can uphold to, and they're not thinking about real people. They're thinking about forcing people to do what they want to. All they're worried about is their own little red wagon. This affects real people, and it's important to other people. Just because they don't understand why it's important doesn't mean it's not. So there's a myriad of problems that would come from trying to subject yourself to the ridiculous rules that the Freedom From Religion Foundation is saying is appropriate behavior for school employees. Also, here's another potential problem. They may not be used to this in a big city, but in a small town in rural Alabama, what happens if the only churches that could host the event, if you aren't allowed to have it on campus like they're suggesting, what if all those churches just happen to also have members in that church that are employees of the school? Because, you know, let's say you got a Baptist church, a Methodist church, a Catholic church, and, I don't know, a Church of Christ and a couple of others. There may only be four or five churches in town. There's a pretty good chance that each of those churches has at least one employee that worships there. So does that mean that those venues now are all barred? Because according to the writing of this particular letter, that seems to be the conclusion that they're reaching. So, again, this has nothing to do with freedom of religion. All it has to do is them trying to bully people out of engaging in religious activities connected with the school. And since that's the road they want to take, and they're so convinced that this would be against the Constitution, against what the founders had in mind, let's go to the founders, shall we? Let's go to Benjamin Rush, who is one of only six people to sign both the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. Also, Benjamin Rush, his nickname was the Father of Public Schools, played an integral role in public schools in early America. In fact, not only was he that, but he was one of the earliest abolitionists. He and Benjamin Franklin and a couple of the other founders got together and formed the first slavery abolitionist society that America had ever seen. Let's see what he had to say about public schools and religion. This is a direct quote. "The great enemy of salvation of man, in my opinion, never invented a more effective means of limiting Christianity from the world than by persuading mankind that it was improper to read the Bible at schools." Keep in mind, this is the man that was credited with starting public schools in America. He's saying that it is not improper to read the Bible at school. Furthermore, let's go on something else from Benjamin Rush. "The Bible, when not read in schools, is seldom read in any subsequent period of life. The Bible should be read in our schools in preference to all other books because it contains the greatest portion of that kind of knowledge, which is calculated to produce private and public happiness." So here Benjamin Rush is saying, for the good of our students and for the good of our country, we must teach the Bible in school, preferably over every other book. So not only should we be able to read the Bible in school, it should be the preferred textbook over every other textbook that has ever been written. This is the man that signed the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. He understood liberty, he understood the First Amendment, and he also understood that it did not prohibit teaching the Bible and engaging in religious activities at school. All right, let's go to Noah Webster. Yes, the dictionary guy. Same Noah Webster that wrote the dictionary. He was also, this is something people don't know about him, he was also a soldier in the Revolutionary War, a judge, a lawyer, an educator. He was nicknamed the schoolmaster of America. So you had Benjamin Rush and Noah Webster, who often would work together, the schoolmaster of America and the father of public schools. Noah Webster said, "Our citizens should early understand that the genuine source of correct Republican principles is the Bible, particularly the New Testament or the Christian religion." So in other words, the Bible and the Christian religion, Christian theology, should be taught in our public school system. Noah Webster goes on later to say, "The Christian religion is the most important and one of the first things in which all children under a free government ought to be instructed. No truth is more evident than the Christian religion must be the basis of any government intended to secure rights and privileges of a free people." So in other words, Christian religion is not only supposed to be taught early in our public schools, but it's also supposed to be taught in our government. And if we fail to do this, our government will start to fall apart. Well, now, I don't want to call Noah Webster a fortune teller, but look at our country right now. Apparently he was right. Because we've taken God out of schools, we've taken God out of government, and look where we are. So both of these men were crucial in developing American public education. They both taught the Bible and biblical principles in their own classrooms. And let's not forget another important founder, Thomas Jefferson, founded the first state-funded religious school, the University of Virginia. Obviously not a religious school now, but when Jefferson started, it was. And it was the first multi-denominational school in the country as well, funded with state money. Liberals want to invoke the Constitution and the founders when it suits them, and when it doesn't, they want to kind of throw it away. Hour 2 coming up next.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
What's up, preacher man?
New proof that Russia did try to hack our election system. We have the details on the Patriot Preacher. Welcome back, everyone. Hour 2 of the Patriot Preacher is on now. 860-1440 are the call-in numbers. And we do have this article coming from Bloomberg. And I know that people are going to misinterpret what I'm saying here. I'm talking about the Russians trying to hack into the American election system. This has nothing to do with Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. I am not suggesting, because this was attempted, that Donald Trump is somehow not the legitimate president or anything like that. So don't misinterpret that way. Take the personalities out of it. Let's just look at the raw facts that we have that were broken by Bloomberg the other day. According to them, there were several investigations that came out with new information just a couple days ago. And we have new information about how widespread the Russian hacking was. Now, also keep in mind, nothing in this article suggests that they succeeded. And we heard from James Comey just a few days ago in his testimony that the Russians absolutely did try to get into our system, but it didn't work. So Comey also said that they're going to be back. In other words, we have to be aware of the fact that the Russians did try to hack into our system and they're going to try it again, especially considering that we essentially didn't offer any repercussions for what they did, which means that why not try it again? If it's not going to cost them anything, why not try to interfere in the 2018 elections? I would too if I were them. So that being said, according to this, in Illinois, hackers tried to delete voter data. Now here's the thing. If you're trying to delete voter data, what does that have anything to do with affecting who won the election? I guess theoretically you could do all the wire work to try to go through and find individuals that might vote one way or the other and delete just their data. So, for example, if you did want Hillary Clinton to win, you could go through, find the people that are probably going to vote for Trump, and then delete their data out of it. But that's not what we're getting from this particular investigation. Apparently, this was a spear phishing campaign that was just going to delete a lot of voter data, with absolutely no regard to who it was. They were just wanting to go in and delete names off the ledger. So imagine this. Imagine your average American citizen, you know, whatever, walking into your polling place. You know you're registered to vote. You've been registered to vote in that particular district that you go to vote for years. You walk in. You say your name. They look down the list and they say, yeah, we don't have your name here. Well, see, there's a couple reasons that that's problematic. First of all, you don't get to vote. But second of all, can you imagine the reaction of the average American if the election didn't go their way and they know for a fact that they were registered to vote and didn't? See, that's the thing about what Russia was trying to do. I don't think that they were trying to help anybody in particular win the election. They may have been trying to help Trump win the election in other ways, but at least in this particular instance, it appears as though, and this the evidence seems to back this up, that they were just trying to cause chaos. They were just trying to cause problems. They were trying to undermine our faith in our system. According to this report, the investigators claim that the Russian hackers hit 39 states. Again, these are failed attempts, but attempts nonetheless. So in 39 out of 50 states, imagine the chaos if that had worked. If just, it wouldn't even had to have been in really massive numbers. Let's just say a few hundred thousand voters didn't get to vote in each of those 39 states. Well, that's certainly enough to tip the balance of which way each state goes, depending on the population of the state. So let's say you're right here in Alabama, 10,000 would have, well, probably not made a difference in Alabama because of how far for Trump that we went. But imagine we're a battleground state. Only takes 5,000 to 10,000 names if it was close to really affect that election. And so that being said, it's interesting to know that apparently what the Russians were trying to do is just undermine our faith in our own system. Because can you imagine, for example, in Illinois, and again, Illinois was part of the one of the big subjects of this particular thing because this is where they discovered one of the big hacks. Can you imagine in Chicago what would have happened if Illinois wound up going for Trump because, you know, a quarter of the city of Chicago had their names deleted off of the voter data database? There would have been riots all over that city. And so I really do think that the Russians weren't necessarily trying to skew the election one way or the other, at least in this particular attack. They were just trying to cause chaos and cause us to not have faith in our own systems and also not have faith in each other. I mean, as divided as the country is, can you really say that something like this happening wouldn't have been a disaster? So I want you to think about the implications of that. Apparently, according to this report as well, new information was found out that the Obama White House actually knew about this and complained directly to Moscow back in October using what they call the modern version of our red phone. So a back channel method for communicating directly with the Kremlin. They found out about this, got directly in touch with the Kremlin and said, hey, you guys back off. So the Obama White House knew about this the entire time. So again, this has nothing to do with Trump or Hillary. This happened under Obama's watch. Now, it was a failed attempt, so let's give the Obama White House and their State Department, which handles these matters, at least enough credit to say that even though the attempt happened, it was stopped. But at the same time, you can't really blame Trump or Clinton for this because this would have been something that happened under the Obama White House. And here's my question. How on earth is this not an act of war? Directly interfering with our vote counting system, or at least attempting to in this case, by a foreign power? It's one thing for a country to bankroll a certain campaign, which I already don't like. But even still, that's one thing. But this is a foreign government, the Kremlin, which the FBI director just testified had a direct line into this attempt, trying to actually affect the outcome of our election and interfere with our voting process. I don't see how that's not an act of war. I'm not saying we need to just start lobbing Tomahawk missiles at Russia, but what I am saying is this needs to be taken a lot more seriously than it has been so far. And even though I think it was the Obama administration that didn't take it seriously enough the last time, I'm quite concerned that especially because Trump has shown a, in my opinion, dangerous friendliness towards the Kremlin, I'm worried that the president may not take this seriously enough either. And so I'm trying to be fair, trying to give him time. Maybe it is possible that because this is all hush-hush, that they are doing stuff behind the scenes that has to do with this. And obviously the missile attack in Syria shows that Trump doesn't mind at least doing things that agitate Russia. So I'm not saying it's not possible they aren't doing anything that we don't know about. But this needs to be taken incredibly seriously. Because if this had worked, that would have torn our country apart, at least temporarily, with the chaos it would have probably caused. 860-1440, if you want to weigh in, we'll be right back. 6 to 8 years to arrive, and if you follow them,
is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Colossians 3:17. Whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks through him to God the Father.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to call in, talk about the Russian hacking that we've got going on here. So if your dad won $4,000 to upgrade his favorite spot at home, where would that be? Would he buy a big screen TV and upgrade his basement man cave? Would he do something with the patio, maybe refinish it, put a nice new grill out there, upgrade his lawn care equipment, buy that fancy new mower he's had his eye on? Well, you can find out if you win our Top Pop contest. You can enter today at NewsRadio1440.com and give your dad the best Father's Day ever. Just tell us why your dad's great, and we will put you in the running for the Top Pop contest and the $4,000 grand prize. Speaking of Father's Day, we've got Father's Day at the Montgomery Zoo and the Mann Wildlife Learning Museum. They're offering free admission for all dads on Father's Day, Sunday, June the 18th. Create lasting memories and enjoy quality time with dad during a fun-filled trip to the zoo. The Montgomery Zoo is home to over 500 species of animals featured in five continental realms. Don't miss some of the zoo's newest residents, including a baby ring-tailed lemur, a juvenile giraffe, and cheetahs. The Montgomery Zoo and Mann Wildlife Learning Museum is open daily from 9 to 5:30, with the last ticket being sold at 4. They also have discount combo admission to the zoo and Mann Wildlife Museum for adults at 20 and children 15. Toddlers 2 and under are free. So lots of good things going on at the museum. If you're a dad, you want to get in free, save yourself a little money, get to spend Father's Day with your kids at the zoo, you can do that. Free admission on Father's Day for all dads. One last thing. We have the Decades Rewind at the Impact, which is going to be on June the 22nd. We have tickets right here. So if you're interested in going to the Decades Rewind, you like that classic music, like I do, of course, I'm kind of out of my time. Even though I was born in 89, I'm a big 70s and 80s music buff, so be sure to check that out. Two-pack of tickets right here. You can get them by listening to the Patriot Preacher, calling us at 860-1440.
You know what? You are, ever since I've known you, or since I've gotten to know you, you're just like music. You like a lot of different
music. I do love music.
You love music.
I'm a music guy.
In fact, some of the stuff you love, I kind of think, I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's some surprising stuff over there on my playlist. Joe, of course, playing all my music and picking it. So
that's right.
So thank you for that, Joe. Getting back to the whole Russia thing. According to this article in Bloomberg that was talking about the Russians doing this attempted hack, they said the White House contacted the Kremlin before the election. In other words, Obama knew about this. Now, why he didn't inform the American people, honestly, I don't know. My guess would be they were worried about panic, and there's a time and a place for that. I certainly understand that. Personally, I would have rather them. Here's what I think. I'm just going to get straight to this. I think that part of the motivation for the Obama White House not putting it out there is because, keep in mind, that everybody, including me, thought that Hillary Clinton was going to win this election and win it big. I predicted that. Now, I predicted it would be closer than most of the political prognosticators did. I had her winning it by only a couple states. But the simple truth is, everybody expected Hillary Clinton to win. It is possible that the Obama administration's motivations were pure and that they were just trying to keep panic out of the streets. I think a far more likely answer is that they believed Hillary Clinton was going to win, and they did not want to taint the victory of Hillary Clinton by suggesting that the Russians even were going to attempt to break in. Especially considering that, even though I disagreed with them saying this, presidential candidate Donald Trump going out there and saying, hey, if Hillary wins, it'll be because she cheated and she stole this election. Now, that was beyond asinine. And I said it at the time. But considering that and considering where we were as a country when the election happened, I think that part of the Obama administration's motivation for not informing the public had nothing to do with panic. If I had to guess, it had everything to do with the fact that they were campaigning hardcore for Hillary Clinton to win it and expected her to win it and did not want to taint her victory by people out there knowing that the Russians were trying to get involved in the election. Now, I believe if everybody had been convinced that Donald Trump was going to win this and Hillary Clinton's poll numbers were so bad that it was clear that she was probably going to lose, then this would have been all over the front page of every single newspaper in America, would have been released by the Obama White House, and all anybody would be talking about is how the Russians are going to be hacking into this election. Now, again, their attempts failed. It didn't make a difference. According to the FBI director, not a single vote was altered because of the Russian involvement, but the attempt was made in 39 states, according to this new report. And I want to say this as well, and this is something that Joe and I actually disagree on. This is the epitome of why the Electoral College is a very good thing, because they didn't have to hack into one national system like they would have if they were hacking their own system, because, you know, that's how Russia works. They have a national election. Everybody votes exactly the same way, and everybody's vote counts for the same, and the popular vote is what decides it. You see, in America, because we have 50 different states, and within those states there are possibly 3, 4, 5 different voting methods, depending on what precinct you happen to be in, your voting district. You know how hard it is to hack all those systems all at exactly the same time and get a particular result?
Yep.
It's virtually impossible.
But we know this time they really are. We'll take Comey and at his word that it didn't affect one vote, but, you know, and I'm just kind of trying to be funny here. Because popular vote-wise, if they tried to affect the change, the Russians, it didn't work because Hillary got the most votes.
That's true.
But somehow they affected the Electoral College because Trump won that way.
Right.
It's a
nonsensical argument to make the case that the Russians did affect the vote and that caused Donald Trump to win, because obviously,
if it's strictly been popular vote, their efforts for Trump to win would have not worked.
Right. That's what I'm not arguing with you. I'm agreeing with you.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, I didn't make that clear. But anyway, that's one of the reasons that the Electoral College, in my opinion, is a very good thing. The fact that we've got all those different systems and they would have to have hacked into all of them at the same time and only affected certain districts at certain times with certain voters. Well, that made their job 1,000 times harder than it would have been if we had one national system that was affected only by the popular vote.
Well, I may change my mind. I've got 4 years.
Well, yeah, maybe we will. I don't know. Maybe we'll finally get you thinking right there, Joe.
But I doubt it.
Well, anyway, though, but seriously, that is really a testament to why the Electoral College is a great system. I'm not saying it's perfect. I'm not saying it doesn't have its pitfalls. But in this particular case, when we're talking about someone trying to hijack the election, and not that there's never been voter fraud, we always have some voter fraud every single year. But with all these different systems that work together, that we tally it up, and then the states essentially send representatives from their Electoral College to vote, that works in our favor as far as someone hacking our election system. Ask anybody, any hacker, and they will tell you it's a lot easier to hack into one system than it is multiple systems at the same time, especially when there's different coding, they're connected to different networks. I mean, it would have been virtually impossible for them to have affected the election one way or the other, because that's how our system works. So, in a sense, the Electoral College is what helps save us, because goodness knows what kind of damage they could have caused if they'd only had to hack into one system.
I can't refute that argument.
Well,
it may have.
May have. But that's the thing, and this is my final point. Nothing in this article is about Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, nor is it an evidence of a connection between one campaign or the other to the Kremlin. This is about undermining our system and having our people mistrust each other. And this is the problem that I have with the way that we've conversed with one another over the past little while. We've made even those that we think of as our nation's rivals and enemies a political game. Whether you like the Russians or not now is dependent on whether you're a Republican or Democrat. Whether you like or don't like what's going on in the Middle East is dependent upon whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. Look, the Russians want to bring down America. They're not trying to bring down the Republicans. They're not trying to bring down the Democrats. They're trying to bring down America. And we're all Americans. So this is an issue that affects all of us. I get the reason that we have some differences, that we can't unite on everything. We should be able to unite on this. And I think a lot of it goes back to we've lost the ability to call evil evil. That's why Reagan was able to defeat the Russians back in the day. He said, that's the evil empire. They're the enemy. We're going after them. And he was able to unite at least the majority of America behind him in that endeavor. We need a Reagan-esque, not necessarily a Republican, just a Reagan-esque leader now that can unite us against evil. And if we can do that, I think we'll be all right. We need to be able to call evil what it is. We'll be right back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Governments could not give the rights essential to happiness. We claim them from a higher source, from the King of Kings and the Lord of all the earth, General John Dickinson, signer of the Constitution.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. Think, shop, buy local. Think of our local economy, shop at our local businesses, and buy from our local companies. They're the ones that give back to the community. They support our local economy. So be sure to look at all these local businesses we have right here. Cumulus Media supports our River Region local businesses, including Adams Motorsports, Ashland Cake Cottage, and Pepper Tree Steaks and Wine. So we've got some great companies here in the River Region, and I encourage you to check them out, look into it. We have a lot of great folks who are just trying to make it here in the Montgomery area who do great work. You're not going to be disappointed. And speaking of great local businesses, Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center is one of the best in the River Region. Been in business here for 50 years, and the reason they have been is because their customers trust them. They have a relationship with their customers, and their customers know that they do great work, which is why they keep coming back. You cannot stay in business that long without quite a bit of repeat business. And that's exactly why they're still in business. They're just that good. People trust them. They do excellent work, and they do it at a fair price. So Jim Woodham, Southside Firestone Tire Auto Center, whether you need your tires aired up, whether you need an oil change, or you need major engine repair, they've got somebody there that can do it. If they detect a problem that they can't solve, they can recommend you to somebody who can. So be sure to check them out on the Troy Highway on the south side of Montgomery today. That is Jim Woodham's Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center on the Troy Highway. Check them out today. We have somebody on the phone, Joe?
Yeah, AJ.
Hey, let's bring AJ on. Let's see what AJ's up to. Good morning, AJ. AJ, you there? Ah, there we are.
Pieces, and you said something about with the information you put out about as far as the Russians attempting to and saying that they failed, that it would have divided and caused the trust of Americans as far as our government. You said something to that effect?
Essentially, yes.
Well, look here, Caleb. Now, you already know this, brother. Okay? That trust didn't just start with this. That started way back in 2000 with that hanging chad. And when 2008 hit and Barack Obama got the first presidency, it divided the country right there. So this division and antitrust is nothing new. I'm going to tell you, I got on the ship where, and I've told you this before on your show, you had your own show, I virtually despise both sides of politicians. Now, I'm going to say this, and I'll say it again. I said it to Mark, and I said it to Kevin. I think I said to you. I don't care if a monkey was running this time for presidency. The Republicans and Democrats, okay, were sick and tired of these establishments who have lost real Americans, black, white, Hispanic, Japanese, Chinese Americans. They lost our trust, man, a long time ago, brother. They care about nothing but their party, their cronies, and then they'll throw America breadcrumbs. Now, the reason Donald Trump got in there, whether you agree or voted for him or not, because he said, look, I'm sick and tired of sending billions overseas and not taking care of America first, especially when the overseas hates our guts. Me and Kevin got a big disagreement with this 16-year war that we're in. Okay? And that's
well, it's only been 16 years, AJ. I mean, come on. The average war is, what, 35?
Okay.
I'm just kidding.
Right? Oh, yeah, I know. But this is the thing. This is the problem I got. If your neighbor on the left robs your house, okay, and we ain't going to get into this, but you don't go shoot and kill and destroy your neighbor on the right if you're one on the left robbed your house.
Yeah, two wrongs don't make a right.
That's what Bush did. That's what George Bush did. Okay? Well, 3,000 were killed in 9/11. Yeah, and the churches were filled for 6 months, and we were united. Caleb, you remember this?
I remember.
We were united as a country when 9/11 hit. For 6 months, church were full. 6 months later, they got to doing the same old thing that we normally do, just like in the Book of Noah. They went right back to partying, having a good old time, and kicking God to the curb and saying, we ain't got nothing. God, we don't appreciate what you did, giving these blessings to America. Right or wrong, Caleb? You know, you was a teenager, but you was around.
Yeah, I was around. It is amazing how quickly, and I've studied the Old Testament my whole life, it is amazing how quickly people just kind of forget. Because, you know, we'll unite, coalesce around God, and then, you know, like you said, about 6 months later, we're just back to business as normal.
Yeah, you need to tear down. You blew up two buildings, killed over 3,000 people, and 6 months later, it was like nothing happened. And one bone I get to pick with you, Caleb, when you said, you know, with them hacking and trying to interfere in the election.
Right.
Now, the last time I checked, America did it too. Okay? They interfere overseas too. Now, we know that, okay? But
we interfere in different ways, but yes. President Obama, for example, President Obama was trying to
interfere at all. We don't want them in our business, and we ain't got no business in their business.
I agree.
The bottom line is this. When you say an act of war, come on now. I don't agree with that, brother. We don't, hey, just because somebody's dipping their nose in our company, that's not no act of war to me, all right? We better just make our system a little better. Going over there fighting because they're trying to change the result of our election when the people are crooked anyway.
Well, now keep in mind, AJ, I did say, if you'll remember in my last little monologue, I did not say that this means we need to go to war with Russia, because goodness knows I don't want to be in a war with Russia. But I'm saying we're not treating it seriously enough. I think that it is to the level of being an act of war that we need a pretty strong response.
Hey, guys, I've got a question for both of you. What would be an act of war? How far would Russia have to go?
They'd have to do a, and I'm going to say his name because it sounds like the same when you're on the toilet, Joe. Kim Jong, when you're on the toilet doing number two, that's what his name sounds like. But if you shot one of the missiles over this way, that's an act of war.
That would be an act, yes. Bombing someone is an act of war.
Yeah,
well. You wouldn't have to hit either, Joe. If you just shot one over this way, guess what? We need to shoot one back, but this we don't need to miss you. That's an act of war.
Yeah, but see, we don't want that to happen ever.
Of course we don't.
That's what we don't want to happen.
Only a fool wants to go to war, Joe. Only a fool wants to go to war.
I don't.
I did 20-plus years. My sons have been over there. My dad's been over there. I've been over there. Listen to me. Only an actual fool wants to go to war. But when you play with our men and women, like they're little toy soldiers, and you play that armchair quarterback, now I feel for the congressman, brother, that got shot yesterday.
Absolutely.
But you know, the first thing I thought, I said, you know what? I hate to say this, but I bet he has an idea now how our soldiers feel every freaking day over there fighting in a war we shouldn't even be in. They got to go through that crap every day. I see him out here on Maxwell with missing limbs running around on the PT track. See, evidently, those congressmen and those senators, they don't see that because they're quick to say, hey, let's go to war with Russia or China or whatever. They're quick to say that. But when they go through it, in other words, it ain't no fun when the rabbit got the gun. See, anybody get on to your quarterback, man. You understand what I'm saying? Anybody say, yeah, we ought to go to war, we ought to do this. But guess what? Do you have a dog in the fight? Because, see, you know, every senator and every congressman, 99.9% of them don't have a dog in the fight.
You know, that's...
It's like our tax money, Caleb. And I'm sorry. Caleb, it's like our tax money. They don't give a blank how they spend that money. You know why? Because it's not coming out of their bank account.
Well, it's real easy to spend other people's money, but going on with the whole, that's one thing that I have been thoroughly disappointed in, is that back in the day, and you'll remember this, AJ, because you're a lot older than I am, there was a time where, you know, roughly half of Congress did military service. They were in the service at some point. Now there's like maybe two or three senators and a half dozen House representatives that were actually in the military.
And I'm not picking on George Bush or Trump, but
no, and Bush actually served.
Yeah. Well, okay. and I was going to say something that, but they said they can count the time he showed up at that unit. But old Trump,
I didn't say he was a war hero. I said he served. It's not the same thing.
Yeah. How many times did old Trump, who heard through the great mind that he dodged that draft? How many times did old Romney dodge that draft? You know what I'm saying? How many? He got five sons. And guess what? It doesn't make you a hero because you serve. But guess what? They don't even entertain the idea, Caleb. They don't even entertain it.
You know, thank you, AJ, for your call. I appreciate that.
Bless you, brother.
You know, AJ's 100% right, though, when it comes to some of the people that we have. I'm not saying you can't serve if you weren't in the military. I never served in the military, obviously. You can't be a congressman, can't be a senator. I'm just saying that back when we had a large portion of our elected officials, I do think they were a little more cautious about war because they had, you know, had some experience in it. And that serving, even if you're not necessarily in a lot of danger, even if you're like George W. Bush, never actually served during a wartime or been in a battle, there is an appreciation for that that develops in you when you did it yourself, and it's you do have that dog in the fight. So... You know, I hate to see that. I hate to see that we have lost a lot of that. But when we're talking about an act of war, I do want to make myself clear when I was talking about Russia. Russia is our enemies, and they do hate us. And this was obviously an act of aggression against America trying to interfere in our election. That does not mean that I'm suggesting that we ought to be lobbing Tomahawk missiles at the Kremlin. But I'm just saying, can we please take this seriously and not act as though you're... some tin hat conspiracy theorist out on the fringes for believing this. This has been reported by multiple credible news sources that say U.S. investigators have brought this to our attention. And let's quit making it political. Whether or not you believe the Russians hacked, or tried to hack, sorry, our election system should have no bearing on the way that you voted. That's all I'm asking for. Just a little bit of reason and following the evidence where it may lead, wherever that may be. Star Spangled Sermon up next.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Colossians 3:17. Whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks through him to God the Father.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers. Star Spangled Sermon starts now. To set the story up, Paul warns a young Timothy, who he's kind of taken under his wing as his apprentice, that dark times are coming. He's worried about Timothy and his spiritual strength and his ability to weather the storm that is on the horizon. You see, in the early part of 2 Timothy... Well, I tell you what, we'll just read it, and I want you to, as we're going through it, I want you to be thinking if any of this sounds familiar to today. 2 Timothy 3:2-5. For men will be lovers of self, lovers of money, boastful, arrogant, revelers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy, unloving, irreconcilable, malicious gossips, without self-control, brutal, haters of good, treacherous, reckless, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, holding a form of godliness, although they have denied its power. Avoid such men as these. So there are all these negative qualities that Paul is saying, hey, you're going to need to watch out for this because there are going to be people surrounding you that have these qualities. And yet, what does he end with? Holding to a form of godliness, although they have denied its power. Well, this is all describing the same group of people. How can someone be all these negative things, lovers of self, boastful, arrogant, revelers, ungrateful, how can they have all that and still hold to a form of godliness? You see, one of the things that Paul is warning against here, and he's trying to strengthen Timothy against and prepare him for, is that he's saying that these things aren't going to be obvious. The people that I'm describing, the people that I'm warning you about, they're going to have these qualities, but they're all going to be under the surface. They're going to have a form of godliness. In other words, they're going to seem like good people to you on the outset, but underneath, they've got all this going on. And he's saying you're going to have to look for those signs and question who's around you. You see, especially in our Western cultural sensibilities, we always tend to think of the devil as this cartoonish red character with horns and a pitchfork and a long tail. Evil never comes in an obvious form. It shows up in a form that we like, that is appealing to us. As far as that goes, that's really the greater danger, that we're going to run into people that want to corrupt us. We're going to run into temptations that don't seem like temptations, and they don't seem like a bad thing right at the beginning. And that's what Paul is trying to warn his young, what he refers to as his son in the faith, about. But luckily, as Paul always does, he offers a solution to this, a way for us to know, a way for us to determine what we're to do and who we are to trust and not trust. Let's skip down several verses to 2 Timothy 3:16 and 17. All scripture is inspired by God and profitable for teaching, for reproof, for correction, for training in righteousness, so that the man of God may be adequate, equipped for every good work. We are going into battle, and Paul makes that clear here. And we're going into battle against a very strong force with evil that we may not always recognize. But the solution is the scripture, the words that God left us, the principles that he taught us there. They're profitable for reproof, for correction, and training in righteousness. And it says later on that we will be adequate, equipped for every good work. So in other words, not only is the scripture there to help us with that, but the scripture in and of itself is adequate. We've got everything we need. We don't need anything else. God does send us into danger. Sometimes he allows us to suffer. He allows us to struggle so that we may grow. But he never leaves us ill-equipped. He may send us out to battle, but we've got all our gear if we want it. So he's provided us a way to navigate these dangerous waters, and that is his inspired word. Scripture provides us a measuring stick to tell if somebody is real or fake. And it does exactly the same thing for us. It allows us to essentially look at ourselves in the mirror, compare ourselves to what the scripture teaches, and say, all right, do I have any problems? Do I have any weaknesses? Are there things that I can correct here? And so because of that, we're able to look at ourselves, evaluate ourselves, and strengthen ourselves, correct our weaknesses, enhance our strengths. Why do we have the scripture? So that we can know God, and that we can be adequate in that knowledge, that we can be ready for what's coming. Scripture is enough. We don't need anything else. Other men's opinions, they can be helpful, they can give us some kind of insight, but men's ideas are not needed to be right with God. Studying the Word with others is wonderful and encouraging, but we always go back to the Bible as our primary source. And if anybody tells us something good about God, good information, keep in mind that where they got that information was also the Bible. So that's not a credit to them, that's a credit to the Scriptures being adequate. God revealed himself in such a way that our relationship through study and obedience, independent of others, is sufficient. Stay the course, friend.
The The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.